The Rabbanon, the rabbis, added glass. We tovel glass, we immerse glass. That's a rabbinic mitzvah, not more. Still significant, but which has ramifications in cases of doubt. We'll see that sometimes there are factors that make the whole obligation due to a circumstance, one or the other, questionable. So if it's only a rabbinic mitzvah, we are quicker to be lenient than if it is a Torah mitzvah. So it's really metal and glass. Again, this should not be confused with koshering utensils. Which utensils can be koshered, you know, can be put into a vat of boiling hot water to extract the non-kosher absorptions, it doesn't follow the same rules as which utensils should be immersed when purchased from a non-Jew. Those are two different concepts. Wood, for instance, can be koshered. It's not common, but if you use wood, a wood keli, a wood utensil, for hot food and it became non-kosher, you can kosher it through boiling water, assuming it's smooth. But wood certainly does not have to be immersed in a mikveh. If you buy a wood utensil, that would be an example of something that does not have to be immersed. Plastic, there are some poskim who are stringent, but the vast majority, and this is pretty much accepted as halacha, is that we do not immerse plastic. Even though the reason for glass, why did the rabbis extend the halacha to glass, is because glass is in some ways similar to metal, in that you can remake it, you can melt it and remake it into something which plastic would be similar in that vein, but the post can nevertheless distinguish and say plastic is further removed. It's not the same as metal or even glass, and therefore plastic is not obligated. China is a big question. China itself does not need to be immersed. Cheres, earthenware, is certainly one of the materials that does not need it. However, some poskim hold that china should be immersed if it is glazed. Most china has a viscous glaze. It's covered with a thin coating of glass. So the early poskim talk about that if something that doesn't require immersion is coated with glass, it should be immersed. However, there's a debate among contemporary poskim whether they were talking about a good, hefty coating, like a real thick glass coating, not this very, very thin coating that we have on our china today. So therefore, if Moshe Feinstein held that china, that our china today does not have to be toveled, I believe Rabbi Kamenetsky held that way also, so that in the sefer today. But many people do. I personally do immerse china. There are different practices on this question. In any questionable case, we don't say a bracha. We'll talk about the bracha later, but that's the general rule in all of halacha. In any case where you're not absolutely sure that it's a mitzvah, so I'm not allowed to say a bracha unless I'm sure it's warranted, so I'm not going to say a bracha when immersing china or any of the questionable cases that we'll mention. You don't make a bracha when you're doing something that you're not sure is really mandatory. Sometimes you have utensils that are made of different parts. It's plastic on the outside and glass on the inside and so on. Usually, in many of those cases, it's going to require immersion without a bracha. Especially if the part that touches the food is of the material that would be obligated in immersion, so it will require to be passed without a bracha. But you have to take it on a case-by-case basis. If the material is very incidental and it really is not an integral part of the utensil, then it wouldn't be so. But if the material that is obligated, metal or glass, makes up a significant part of it, usually that utensil will require tefillah, will require immersion. Okay? Let's talk about types of kalim, types of utensils. As I said in the beginning, it's utensils that are used for food, food preparation, food service, but the halacha does say that a utensil that does not complete the process, that after it's been used, the food is not edible. So a kneading bowl, if it's used only for kneading, or something like that, where you can't eat the product the way it emerges from this utensil, we immerse it out of bracha. Something that you serve with, forks and knives you eat with, that certainly requires a bracha. something that prepares the food fully to an edible state requires a bracha when immersed, but something that is used in the food preparation process but doesn't bring it to a state of being ready to serve usually does not require a bracha. Rav Moshe Feinstein is a very interesting tshuva. He holds that a toaster does not require tevila. We'll talk about electric items in a minute anyway, but he holds for a different reason. He says, what does a toaster do? The bread was fine without it. What's your problem? What do you need to toast it for? He says, that's not, didn't really do anything. He says, so some people like their bread a little drier, a little browner. He holds that that's not a real process. Many other folks can hold, some folks can hold that you immerse it with a bracha. So it's questionable. But I just mentioned that because it illustrates the point that if the keli, the utensil, doesn't really fulfill an important process in the food preparation, it reduces the level of its obligation. A nutcracker, not to play. A nutcracker is an interesting question. Rav Moshe Feinstein says to immerse it without a bracha, meaning it's questionable. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says that if it cracks the kind of nuts that you would put out on the table with their shells, which very often is the case, you put out a tray of nuts or something, so then that's considered food. Right? You put out an orange. So an orange has peel. A nut has a shell, but that's part of the food. You present it that way. You wouldn't put out a chicken with the feathers on it, I hope, but you would put out nuts in their shell, so that's, it's already considered food, so it's not actually edible, but it's something that is, let's say, servable. So therefore, he says, the nutcracker touches what's considered a servable food, and therefore, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach holds that even you would do it with a bracha. I think most people would immerse it without a bracha, but that's a little bit of a discussion in the halacha. Okay, now, a very interesting question is utensils that are sold with food in them. Some of you may have been to a supermarket. There are things that are sold in glass jars and metal tins, metal cans. I've heard about this. I've never seen it myself, but supposedly there are such items in the world. So the next time I buy a can of vegetables, I should go home, open it up, dump out the string beans, run over to the mixer, stick the can in the mixer, run home and put the string beans back and close the lid, right? That would be quite very difficult. So what's the halacha when it comes in? It's a metal utensil. It stores food. Why not? So the halacha is as follows. There are different shitas. Everyone agrees, my impression, that you don't have to do that. What the logic is, it might be that nobody means to acquire something which is thereby going to make it impossible. If I'm acquiring this can, then the can necessitates me to not have the can, to take the food out, which is like an impossible situation, so nobody means to take possession of it. What I'm buying are the beans or whatever's inside of it, not the can. This is one argument, one svara that's put forth. Moshe Feinstein has a fascinating understanding of the whole issue. He says that when you buy something which is made for its contents, when you buy a canned product, the can is not significant. The can is what we call a tussle. It is secondary to the food. The manufacturer really made food, but you can't sell food loose. You have to sell it in some kind of utensil, some kind of container. So the container is secondary to the food, but what he really manufactured is food. If I then decide to use it afterward, I had a can of coffee grinds and I emptied it out afterward and used it for to store other food. So what he sold me, let's say, was a disposable. Was a non-keli. It's not a real utensil. It has no permanence. It has no individual significance. It doesn't have significance in its own right. I then turned around and said, no, I want to use it for something long-term. So who made the utensil? I did. The Goy manufactured, the non-Jew manufactured a disposable item or an item that is secondary to its contents and therefore has no significance in its own right. I then turned around and turned it into something to be used long term, so it's a Jewish manufactured item. I didn't make it physically, but I made it through designation. I designated it to be used long term, and therefore he says, this is the story that he puts forth, why one would not have to immerse such a utensil. He writes in that response to him, he writes that he remembers in Russia that they did not immerse these utensils and they would reuse them afterward. So he says that's the minhag. Some want to distinguish between if it's metal versus glass. Some would only rely on this if it's something that's only chayav midrabbanan, it's a rabbinic obligation. But many poskim feel that we can rely on this entirely, and therefore, if I take a glass jar that was produced with food in it, and then I use it for something else, it was only secondary to the food when it was produced, and therefore it's like I'm making it, and it does not require tevila. There are those who are more stringent. There are some, many poskim and Yisrael held that you're allowed to use it the first time around without immersing it. You can eat the gefilte fish from the jar, but then when you're finished, don't refill it with something else unless you tevila. Yes.
Somebody told me that if you
that would assume this more stringent opinion. I think even with there are people who hold that way. Many poskim are not nachna like that. I think even among those who are stringent, I saw something. But if you're just putting it back, that doesn't count. If you use up all the chrein and then you use it to store something else, yeah, that I think even the machmirim, even those who are stringent. If I'm going to say for this, they wouldn't, many of them at least would not go that far. But many poskim are entirely makel and hold that if I choose to reuse it, it's like I made it and it doesn't require tevila at all. Similar, but not exactly the same, disposable utensils. So you mentioned aluminum pans. So we tovel, we immerse aluminum. So what if the utensil is disposable? So if it's only going to be used one time, it's very clear that that's not called a keli, and that's not called a real utensil. That's called disposable utensil. It doesn't have the same halachic status. Where the question comes up is if a person reuses it. So some people, some poskim, are machmir and say that if you can use it more than once, that then it requires tevila. However, there are many who say, and many people rely on this, that it doesn't matter if you happen to choose to use it more than once. It is inherently a disposable item, and it's not durable. It won't last long term, and therefore its status is disposable, whether you throw it out right away or a little bit later. So there is what to rely on to use it more than once. By the way, two points that should be made. First of all, if you don't put the food directly on the utensil, it doesn't need tevila. So people who coat a utensil with something else, it wouldn't require, it wouldn't require immersion anyway. And the second point I'd like to make, a very common misconception, and it seems to be very, very widespread, is there's a myth that you're allowed to use it once without immersion. You get one freebie. I think somebody just a couple weeks ago called me up, a person was pretty knowledgeable on halacha, but said, is it true that I can use it once without immersion? There is no such thing. I think where that misconception comes from is this ruling that some have with regard to disposable items. A disposable item that many poskim say is used only once, you don't have to immerse. Some say if you're going to use it more than once, so then you should do tevila, you should do immersion. But that is not an across-the-board rule. That doesn't mean that if I buy forks and knives and I didn't get a chance to take them to the mikveh, that then I can use it one time as a freebie. There's no such halacha. So I think it's a misconception that comes from the question of disposable utensils. Okay, the rules of chatzitza. Chatzitza means when there's something on the utensil, when it is immersed. The rules of chatzitza are really the same for a utensil as for a person. The Gemara says that if a person immerses and there's something covering the majority of his body, that he normally would not want that on him, that min ha-Torah, at a Torah level, that's invalid. the Rabbanon, rabbinic law, extended that to even a small, something covering a small area of the body. It's called a miut umaktid. It's something that's covering only the smallest portion of the body, perhaps, but it's something that a person would not leave there. Those are the rules when it comes to immersion. So the same is true with utensils. At least, midrabbanan, the halacha is that if there's something on the utensil, dirt, sticker,
sticker residue.
Yeah, by the way, a sticker that's considered a mark of distinction that people leave on to show, you know, look, I have fancy stuff, and people leave it on, is not considered problematic, because that's something that's meant to stay there. I haven't seen too much of that. Usually the stickers you take off. So it's a good idea before taking the utensils to the mikveh to check them first. Because sometimes you get there and then discover that they have stickers, and you end up spending hours and hours trying to take the stickers off. I remember I once had a question that somebody had, there had been some kind of a label that was like rubber cemented on or something, and they couldn't get this glue, this cement off of the utensil, so they asked me what to do. So I spoke to a Rav who I was learning from, a Hasidic Rav, and I said, Rebbe, should I tell him the following? There's a suggestion mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch in a case where a utensil is so heavy that you can't bring it to the mikveh. It weighs 300 pounds. What am I supposed to do? It's not a common scenario, but it's too heavy, or for some reason you can't immerse the utensil. So there's a little bit of a trick, which is questionable, but in the case of pressing need, the post can allow it. So what I do is I give it to my non-Jewish neighbor, and I borrow it back. Now it's his. I'm just borrowing it. Now we're not supposed to do that. You can do that with everything. Okay. All my utensils, everything, I just give it away and borrow it back, and then it's a little bit of what we call a harama. It's a trick, and we're not supposed to rely on it l'chachila in an ideal circumstance. You're not supposed to do that, but in the case where there's no other way to do it, the Shulchan Aruch, the post, can talk about this possibility. So I asked this Hasidic Rav, I said, he's got a problem. He can't get this sticky stuff off the utensil. Should I have him do that? He says to me, gugon. So I thought this was a Yiddish word that I didn't know. What do you mean, gugon? I'm trying to gang it. What's meant to you? I don't know what's gugon. And I only discovered that gugon is a citrus-based cleanser, which is very, very good. It really gets anything off. You put a little bit of this cleanser and let it sit for a few seconds, and it'll take anything off. I always say in halacha, a good suggestion is better than a psak. If you have a good way to avoid the problem, that's better than figuring out the halachic solution. So we should try before getting to mikveh, just check that the utensils don't have things that are stuck to them. If you have already toveled it and you discover afterward that something is there, and if you're right there in the mikveh, to take it off and put it in again. But if it's going to be a bother, you can ask a shiloh. Sometimes if it's very insignificant, if it's something that a person really wouldn't mind if it stayed on there forever, then often it'll be okay. But if it's something that a person, if you had noticed it, you really would have cleaned it off, you wouldn't serve with that on your dishes or something like that, then it's going to be more questionable.
For a certain amount, if you really don't care that the sticker is there all the time, like some mixing bowls, you're never going to
serve. That's questionable. What's called maktid in halacha is very, very...
I'm never going to remove it in my life.
Yeah. It depends on the case. You have to judge it. You're right. Sometimes, who cares? The stick on the bottom of the mixing bowl. It's not, I don't serve with it. I don't know. That depends on the case. So, I should try to take it off. If you didn't, then you have to, let me ask a Shiloh. Okay. By the way, another thing to do if it's something you can't immerse, this is not always viable suggestion, but if you break the utensil in such a way that it's no longer functional, don't try this with fancy china, but if you break it or you disassemble it to the degree that it's non-functional, it's considered broken, and you reassemble it, now it's considered Jewish manufactured. And that does not mean a utensil which is normally done in London, like these, you know, bake these pies or cakes where you take off the shell after you bake it. That's not called broken. That's the way it's supposed to be. I'm talking about when you take something that's supposed to remain intact and you break it, which again, for many things is not practical. If you break it, you might as well buy another one, and you have the same problem. But if it's something that can be disassembled and reassembled, which sometimes is possible, that's another way to, so to speak, circumvent the problem of the halacha. Now, electric appliances. Very interesting question. There are some poskim who hold, now obviously the practical issue is that people don't want to put the George Foreman griller into the mikveh water. I'll tell you that I have done it. I've immersed all kinds of electric appliances. You let them dry out a little bit, I've never had a problem. But there are a number of opinions here. Some posts can hold that any utensil that is used plugged in, as electric appliances are, is not called a keli, it's not called a utensil in halacha. Utensil means non-connected to real estate, not connected to the ground. This vessel, this utensil, is always used connected to the wall. So it's in halacha, something that's connected to the wall, it's called mechubar lakarka. It's like it's in the ground, and therefore it's not called a movable object. It's not susceptible to the laws of tumah, perhaps. And it's therefore considered above the rules of Tevilas Kalim. There are poskim who hold this way. Right. No, so the blade would. The blade would need
to
be.
Well,
the part that doesn't. The bowl, yeah, the bowl would have to. Again, is that a bracha?
So the example you're using is like either a toaster,
right, something
or
like that.
Something where you heat water.
Right. So there are poskim who maintain that since it's always used connected to the wall outlet, it does not require tzvila. Chalukas Yaakov, that's one of the poskim from Europe held this way, I believe. Rav Gedalia Felder, that's Rav Felder's father, from the Pesach in Toronto, I've heard held this way. I think Rav Shmuel holds this way, that I heard. So some folks can rely on this leniency. Others do not. Others say that's not really cool. That's not connected to the ground. If you build something into the wall, that's connected to the ground. But the fact that there's a little cord that sticks into the ground, it's not always left that way. That's not the same thing. Rav Moshe Feinstein, interestingly, holds that you have to immerse only the part that touches the food and not the electric part, which is very surprising because normally the halacha is that tevilas kelim requires the entire utensil to be submerged at one time. This is an important distinction, by the way, between kashering utensils and immersing utensils. If I'm kashering a pot, I can stick half of it into the scalding water and then turn it around and stick the other half. Or if I'm using a blowtorch, I can heat up half of it and then the other half. There's no law that says that the whole thing has to be simultaneous when it comes to making something kosher, extracting or burning off non-kosher food absorption. But when it comes to immersing utensils, generally speaking, you can't stick half the bowl in the mikveh and then turn it around and stick the other half. The whole thing has to be underwater at the same time, which is a general law of immersion. When one immerses, it has to be all simultaneous. So the same is true with utensils. But here, Rav Moshe says, very interestingly, he says when it comes to a utensil like this, only the part that touches the food has to be in the water, not the motor, not the area where the the bulk of the electrical part is, because that doesn't have to go underwater. And his logic is, his explanation is, very interestingly, you know, when it comes to a person immersing, so the halacha is, for instance, if a person immerses, the teeth have to be clean. But when one goes into the water, he doesn't have to open his mouth. If you did, you'd win the Machmer of the Year award, but you don't have to open the water. Parts of the body that can be opened or closed, the mouth really, are what's called a Beis HaSkarim. It has to be what's called Ro'i L'Bi'as Mayim. It has to be clean so that if it were to be exposed to the water, it would cover all surfaces, but it need not actually come in contact with the water. When it comes to utensils, a Beis HaSkarim, which means like an inner part, has to be that it could come in contact with the water, but it doesn't have to be in the water. Here the halacha is different. It doesn't even have to go into the water. My mouth has to be under the water if I immerse, but my toaster's kishkas don't have to get into the water, says Rav Moshe, based on... Huh? Yeah, sorry, but he says the fact that it's sticking out, it's not a blockage, it's not a chatzitza. He says here it's valid for it to be sticking out when the rest is in. That's what he says. I've never heard of anybody who does it that way. But that's what he writes. Others say, just stick the whole thing in. And in fact, that's what I usually do. And if you let it dry out in a dry place for a couple of days, whether it be an urn, sandwich maker, George Foreman griller, never had a problem with any of the above. But again, there are other opinions, and especially if it's something that will be broken, then this sandwich will line.
Between electric and electronic.
Yeah, electronic is more problematic.
Have that little digital screen there.
Yeah.
That's not going to survive.
Yeah. All right. So then, must be something with
the readout. They make a microwave. Well, they also make crock pots now that have that digital timer thing. They would have something to glue in there.
Give it time. There will be. If they don't have it yet. Yeah, by the way, that's a good point, though. An oven that, if you have a rack that you don't put food on, that doesn't require tevilah. If it's something you put the food down on, then it would. And then if it's removable, you put that. You sure they don't have to take the microwave oven and throw it into the...
The oven rack you would use.
Yes, if you put things on them. Right, if you put food directly on them, which most people probably don't. Yeah. Put it on tin foil, you wouldn't have to. Yeah. I mean, well, often in toaster ovens, that little tray people do put things on, but yeah, in an oven, usually not. By the way, the type of mikveh to be used for tevilas kelim has to be a real full-fledged mikveh. There are many communities, very large Jewish communities, where they have, this is just a clarification that's important to be made because people do make mistakes with it. In the communities where they have what's called a men's mikveh, particularly in Hasidic communities where the men go to the mikveh every morning, that mikveh is not built to the specifications that would be valid for immersing utensils. A mikveh for immersing utensils has to be a mikveh that meets all the requirements actually that a woman could use. It's a full-fledged mikveh. There are many more halachos for a full-fledged mikveh. Okay. You said it. A man's mikveh really could be drawn water. The water can't be flowing when it's being used, but there are many leniencies that exists. So therefore, if you're ever in a big community, when I was in yeshiva, we had a little rotation to pump the water out of a mikveh. There was a mikveh in town. They needed guys who were around in the middle of the day. So once every few weeks, I had to go and pump out the water, and then the cleaning service came, and they wanted to have it done under hashgacha, that people, you know, the ways you can make it invalid. So one time when I pumped out the water, the bottom, I saw a couple knives. So that's not a good sign. First of all, most mikvahs have a sign that any place where people immerse, they don't want kelim to be immersed because if a person drops a glass and it hits the floor, there's no way to see it, and it's dangerous. But aside from that, if it's a men's mikvah, should not be used for immersing utensils because it doesn't meet the specifications. In most places, you have a separate kelim mikvah, and that's the safest thing. Have a net, so in case you drop something. A friend of mine once went to a mikveh in Muncie, and he saw a guy that we knew with his legs sticking out of the mikveh. He dropped something. He was fishing down. So we're better off using the right types of mikveh for the right purposes, but that's an important clarification. By the way, a river would be kosher. A lake is more questionable. Many lakes are man-made. therefore the water is really drawn. If the water was brought there through utensils or anything that has what's called a base cable, a receptacle, if it's been through a pump or anything else, then that water, if that's the way the body of water was created, even if later rainwater was added to it, that's not going to be kosher. Many lakes are man-made, but rivers would be kosher for Tevilas Kelim. Well, it should have 40 sa'a. 40 sa'a is the amount of water needed in the mikveh, which is approximately 200 gallons. So a little stream generally would be problematic. Some might hold that for glass, it's okay. But usually we're better off with a full-fledged river. Questionable. Oh, maybe for glasses, because it's derabanan. If it comes up, you know, in places where there aren't mikvahs, there are a lot more questions that come up. By the way, in places in the world where it doesn't rain, there's a question about using snow to make even a real mikvah. Because when water is not in its liquid state, it's a big discussion in the Mishnayos and in the later Poskim. It might be that if it's transferred in that state, it's not like it was actually lifted. It's not like, it's as if it didn't exist. So in places where there's no rainfall, they get a refrigerated truck, they pile it up with snow, they bring the snow to the mikveh. There's a way that they have it enter the mikveh. There's a lot involved there, and it's somewhat suboptimal, but there's no other option in that. Jewish people living, snow can be useful, but if it comes up, one should ask a shayla. It's not so simple to use snow. Yeah. Nowadays, when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, men will have the same chiyuvim in HaTorah for tumah and tahara for eating sacrificial meat that will require real tahara. Men going to the mikveh today is mostly a chumrah, just like before davening. It's a nice thing. It doesn't have the same severity. It's a takanas Ezra, an institution of Ezra HaSofer. It's a little bit less of a, it's not a real chiyuv, according to the vast majority of poskim. It's just for tahara, yisera, for added purity, and therefore doesn't have the same halacha. That's basically what it is. Yeah.
Speaking of chumrah, is it a chumrah or is it just long? I were to immerse things that you say, for example, or can be excluded, like wood.
No, wood I wouldn't do that.
Just don't do it.
Yeah.
So it's wrong to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you certainly can't say a bracha, and it probably is misleading.
So if you say a bracha, you're committing a sin.
Yeah, well, it's a vain bracha, it's a needless bracha. But there are some things where it's questionable, and the vast majority of authorities would say you don't have to, but then, so then one can be machmir if one wants to. But something that's made of a material that just has no obligation, one really shouldn't do it intending to be fulfilling a mitzvah.
Is that the same thing as if you, I know people who live in Israel, a lot of people live in Israel still go and toivel whatever they buy.
Yeah, okay, so there maybe somebody had.
Oh, actually
probably. But, yeah, see, there it might be that they're concerned that they're not exactly sure who manufactured it, so that has merit to it. That's maybe not necessary, but there's an outside concern. But if it's clearly wood, there's no way to that it would be obligated in Tevila. I remember one year when I was in Rabbi Manhattan, I was in charge of not Tevila's Kalim, but koshering the Kalim. Before Pesach, the shul had a big vat of water, and everybody came, and they lined up with their various items. My job to check what it was, and so I'm not the woman who came with her candlestick tray. And I told her, you don't have to kosher a candlestick tray, and there were a lot of people waiting online. When I stepped out for a second, I saw she was sitting there. People have their own ideas of what has to be. I mean, that could be a chumrah. She felt maybe some chumrah splashed there or something. I don't know. But where it's clearly not a mitzvah, we shouldn't do something meaning it to be a mitzvah if it clearly is not obligated. So that I wouldn't do. Question? Yeah. No, definitely not. No, China, we don't say a bracha. Again, some folks can hold that it doesn't have to be altogether because the glaze nowadays is not really considered thick enough, but even those who do should not say a bracha. Now, what is the bracha? It's al tevilas kelim. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melechom, Asher Kedeshanu Mitzvaseh V'Tzivanu. It's usually printed in the Nekva, Al Tevilas Kelim, on the immersion of utensils. If you're immersing only one utensil, so then many posts can say, then you say Al Tevilas Keli, on the immersion of one utensil. There are some posts who say that, no, the minhag is, the minhag in some places, that no matter what, you say Al Tevilas Kelim on the immersion of utensils, even if you're immersing only one. By the way, so you can do it either. Most people say Keli, singular, for one utensil. By the way, a pot and its lid is still considered one. And in addition, if I'm immersing one utensil that I know requires Tevila, I bought a new metal fork and use it for food, I know it requires Tevila. And I'm immersing a bunch of other things that are questionable. I have a few china plates that I'm going to immerse, but some hold you don't have to. So here, the poskim say you can say al tevilas kelim, plural, on the immersion of utensils, even though it's really only one that requires it and the others are questionable, but then we can say the plural. And the truth is, whatever you say, it's not, after the fact, it's not a problem. If you said keli when it should have been kelim, or you said plural when it should have been singular, it's not going to be okay, it's not going to be a problem after the fact.
Is it
the
singular one first?
Yeah, that, there's something I wanted to say, and you just know that I need a good mental association. In general, when you have items that you're not sure if they should be immersed or not, so as I said before, you can't say a bracha. I'm not allowed to say a bracha on a mitzvah unless I know I'm doing the mitzvah, otherwise the bracha is in vain. On the other hand, but maybe it is a mitzvah, and if it is a mitzvah and I don't say a bracha, I'm missing out on the opportunity to say a bracha. The same way if I eat food, I'm supposed to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm supposed to thank God that I have this food. So if I have a spiritual pleasure, so to speak, an opportunity to do a mitzvah, I'm supposed to say a bracha on that mitzvah. So it's a difficult situation. I don't want to say a bracha if it's not warranted, but I don't want to not say a bracha if it is. So the best way to do it is if I have something else that requires a bracha. I mean, this is true in all areas of halacha. I'm putting up a mezuzah on a doorway, and I'm not sure if it requires a bracha or not. So put up a mezuzah on the other doorway that you know it does, and say the bracha there, and then go put up the second one. So the same thing over here. You would say the bracha on the utensil that clearly requires the bracha, and then you'll immerse the other one afterwards. So if it needed a bracha, the bracha was referring to both. And if it didn't, so my bracha was only on the first utensil. But you should do it first, so the bracha is immediate to the one that necessarily requires it. Yeah, we do say a bracha on glass, but I think since metal is min ha-Torah, according to most, and glass only midrabbanan, better to say it on the metal. But we do say a bracha on glass, even though it's only a rabbinic mitzvah, we would say a bracha.
Can you
also
say crystal glass?
Yeah, and they say Duralex, and you know, all these forms of, I think, Chris, I've never heard of anything. You had a question? Maybe there's something. I'm not familiar exactly with the production of crystal. Maybe there's something different.
I don't know why, but it's not really different, but I think for sure maybe it was
without them. Okay, I'm not sure then. I don't know. If we are immersing a lot of utensils, so I make a bracha at the beginning. A couple of years ago, there was a couple that got married, relative of mine, and they called from the common Sheva Brachas activity. You got all these gifts, so you go to the mikveh. That's the big joyous honeymoon, is going and immersing all these utensils. So they called from the mikveh. When they say the bracha, they have to be quiet the whole rest of the time. So, in fact, it seems from the poskim that l'chadchila, really, yes, that we should be making a bracha, and it's referring to all of the whole ongoing mitzvah, all of these items that I'm immersing. So really, preferably, they can talk afterward. Enough time to talk. But really, we should try not to interrupt, at least with extraneous conversation. If you're talking about something relevant to the mitzvah, that's not a problem. You know, hand me the plate, hand me the fork, whatever it is. Yes, dear. But That seems to be the halacha. The Shulchan Aruch, back in the beginning of Yeridei, in the laws of Shechita, talks about there's a bracha that was said on slaughter. So if a person makes the bracha and is going to shecht the number of animals, so the same thing seems to hold true. There's a little bit of a discussion there. The same is true. The halacha talks about a person who's putting on a number of pairs of tzitzis and makes a bracha in the beginning, and he does all. He could really stop. See, the two arguments are, on the one hand, the bracha should be referring to all of those mitzvahs. On the other hand, he doesn't have to do this. He's not in the middle of a mitzvah. Once you did one utensil, you've done the mitzvah. But l'chachila, preferably, l'chachila seems to be that one should not interrupt. Okay.
If you do get interrupted by circumstances beyond your control, then should you make the bracha again?
I don't believe so. No. I don't think you have to. If it's a long... Yeah, and if it's a prolonged, you end up being called out and you have to run, you know, if it's a prolonged interruption, then yes, but if it's short, I don't believe he'd make an bracha. Okay? Any other questions? Okay, just to wrap it up with a machshava, with a sort of a thought, it's interesting, the two schools of thought in the world of Musar, the Musar yeshivas, had two different approaches to perfecting, to working on character perfection. One, which is known as Slobodka, spoke about godless ha'odam, how great a person is. You're much greater than you think. We can all be bigger than we are. We have so much potential. We have to capitalize on it. That is the basic idea of the Slobodka school of Musar. And then the Navardak school of Musar, which is a lot less popular today, was the opposite. I'm nothing, you're nothing, you think you're something, you're nothing, we're all nothing. Vardakas are alleged, or the legend is that they would go and do things that were deliberately embarrassing just to build character. Go into a post office and ask if they sell potatoes just to feel mortified. It was part of the approach of Navardak. I don't think it doesn't work too well today. We need a little more positive chizuk. But in any event, these are two schools of thought. It's interesting, it was in the halachas of Tevilas Kalim, at a sort of a conceptual level, I think you really see both, so to speak. On the one hand, it's very interesting. We know that food is very important in Judaism, in the Torah. You are what you eat. We have the rules of kashrus, of keeping kosher. What's very interesting about Tevilas Kalim is it takes it a step further. Not only is the food that gives me energy has to be of a certain nature, has to be kosher, but the utensils that prepare that food have to go through a, so to speak, a purification process, a tevila. They have to be converted to the task. So it takes it even a step further. This is comparable or parallel to it. We have in halacha, a tashmish de kedusha means something that serves the holy. The Torah is holy. The jacket, the mantle on the Torah is a tashrish de kedusha. It serves the holy. The Torah is holy. The tablecloth on which the Torah rests is a tashrish de kedusha. The table underneath the tablecloth is called a tashrish de tashrish de kedusha. It serves that which serves the holy. So I think the fact that we have a mitzvah tevilas kalim, a notion that not only the food we eat has to have a certain status, but even those things which serve the food we eat, the chicken before the egg has to be go through this tahara process, should on the one hand be very elevating to man. So it's really, it's not only the food, it's even the food's food. Once had the vegetarian at our table, and the other guy was kibitzing him. He said, "We eat food. He eats what food eats." But anyway, in any event, that the fact that it goes a step further teaches us, I think, the greatness of man. It's not only my food, but my food's food that should make us realize the greatness of man. On the other hand, I mentioned the Sfara of Moshe Feinstein, the logic that Moshe uses. He says when you have a keli, a utensil, that hold, a container that holds food, so it's secondary to the food. The container, it's as if it doesn't exist. The food exists. The container is only secondary. It's like a shell. It's like a husk. The only thing that's significant is the food. There's a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos that says that a person carries on Shabbos where there's no Erev, he carries food. He has to carry a certain measure of food in order to have violated Shabbos, at least at a Torah level. If he's carrying less than that, he hasn't violated Shabbos. If a person carries a utensil, no matter how small it is, if it's a usable utensil, he has violated Shabbos. But if I carry a utensil that's holding a small amount of food, I haven't violated Shabbos, at least at the Torah level, because the utensil is secondary to the food that it's holding. And Rav Yitzchak Kutner, the late Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin, has a beautiful essay in his Sefer Pachad Yitzchak. He says this is the whole theme of Shabbos, to teach us that the keli, the utensil, is secondary to what it holds. We're supposed to look at the 6 days of creation and recognize the world is secondary to the ruchnius, to the holiness, the spirituality which it holds. And a person is like that also. Our capabilities, our prowess, our achievements are really only secondary. It's as if it doesn't exist if what's at the core is not significant. If you only have a tiny bit of food, so you don't care that you have a nice big can. If there's only a little bit of food in it, nobody's interested in the can. So we're from the Navardic approach to Musa, which is also reflected in Halachos and Tfilos Kalim, we are what we eat, and we eat is what we are what we eat, or whatever I said before. But on the other hand, we are what we produce. We are what we live in Ruchnius and spirituality. So you see both of these themes within the Halachos of Tfilos Kalim, and I think it's a good machshava for us to think of that in the spirit of the Musar of both Slobodka and Nevada. Okay, next week I hope we will talk about Mukta Toys. Same bad time.